We are starting these classes on Bhagavad Gita, essentially to approach Gita from the Vedantic angle. These classes won't be just classes with learning the shlokas and the literal meaning, but we will go slightly deeper into Vedantic aspects. That is one way of trying to make ourselves comfortable with Vedanta. So I will be using Vedantic terms very often, but wherever I use them, I will explain them in reasonable detail so that you won't be at loss to find out what I am trying to mean. All these texts, whether it is the Upanishad, Veda, or whatever scriptures we have, they all have in them impregnated deep Vedantic purport. And our Acharyas, Adi Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they all have tried to unearth the underlying principles in all these texts. And Shankaracharya has written various texts just to define the terms, the Vedantic terms, which are used in Upanishads for us to understand. He has written texts like Tattva Bodha, Atma Bodha, Viveka Chudamani. These are all texts which give only definitions. When we say Aham Brahma Asmi, what is Brahman? What is Atma? These are all Vedantic terms for which we don't have a direct meaning. So the Acharyas have taken trouble to explain to us what these terms mean. Unless we know these terms, even to approach Bhagavad Gita from the Vedantic angle will be very difficult. So as and when we go, we are going to spend time in understanding these terms based on Tattva Bodha of Adi Shankaracharya, which is considered the Vedantic primer. It is a very simple text. This is a small text. The commentary is written from Shankaracharya's teachings by Swami Dayananda Saraswati. They give very, very elementary principles of Vedanta and also the terms used in Vedanta. I will be using that very liberally and I will explain to you at every stage what these terms mean. So you don't have to be, there is no prerequisite of knowing Sanskrit. There is no prerequisite of knowing Vedanta. You can be with me as we go, and whatever questions you have, you can feel free to ask me at the end of the class. In general, there is a saying, Sarve praninaha sukha praptaye dukkha nivartaye cha pravartate. This is a very, very simple Sanskrit statement. This says, all beings, sarve praninaha sukha praptaye, to gain sukha, to gain happiness, to gain shanti. Sukham is shanti. Dukkha nivrittiye cha, to get rid of sorrow, dukkham. They all strive to gain happiness and to get rid of dukkham. This is the nature of all beings. This is the goal of all beings, to gain happiness. That's what they all strive for. Sukha prapti, by getting education, by getting a good job, by getting name, fame, good house, good people around, all these things are all sukha prapti. They are all gaining happiness by having all these. As they gain all these, they also don't want to have dukkha, sorrow. You may go and buy a beautiful Mercedes car, sukha. We are all happy that we got a nice car, life's ambition. You want to get E class, F class, whatever class it is, you want to go and gain that car, fine. Sukha. The moment you come home, you drive the car a couple of days, then you realize you got almost a lemon car. It is not a lemon yet, almost a lemon. If it is a lemon, no problem. The state will protect you. You can surrender the car and get exchanged. This is almost a lemon, not a lemon. So whatever you thought is sukham has become dukkham. Now what do you want to do? Till you get rid of this car, you are not happy. So what you thought was happiness, now you want to get rid of that car to gain the same happiness, or at least to get rid of this dukkha. So dukkha nivritti. So you want sukham now, happiness, and that happiness also should be an unalloyed happiness. You should not be alloyed with dukkha. Getting a Mercedes car, sukham. But getting a car like this has become dukkham. You want to get, so you want to get that happiness, and that happiness should be an unalloyed happiness. It should not be corrupted with dukkham at all. So it should be dukkham free happiness, sorrow free happiness. Okay, having got that happiness, what all we want also? We want that happiness to be with us permanently. We want the happiness to be with us all the time, permanently. So we want eternal happiness. In Sanskrit, this is called nitya sukham. So we want sukham. We want dukkham free sukham. We want nitya sukham. It should be eternal. Should be with us all the time. And we are not content with that. We want not only this sukham to be there with all the time. It should be also in infinite amount. We are not happy with this much amount. $1 million, you won the lottery. Next time, will I get $10 million? Next time, it can be $100 million. Mind is never content with what we get. Desires always multiply. So we want sukham, dukkham free sukham, nitya sukham, niradisaya sukham. Niradisaya means it should be a sukham which is infinite. So this is what we all crave for. Every being craves for such a sukham. This is the underlying principle. Okay. But when people want to gain such a happiness, we have to now ask a question: is it at all possible to gain such a sukham? There was a philosopher called Bertrand Russell. You might have heard of this name. And he wrote, "Is Happiness Still Possible?" It's a book. Title of the book, "Is Happiness Still Possible?" It's a very, very loaded question. Because whatever you consider as happiness, in 1 minute you can discount whether it is really happiness or not. If you think only one layer deep, you will know. Beauty is only skin deep. Same way, this happiness also, if you analyze one more level into that, we can find out whether it is real happiness or not. So now, if we have to ask the question, whether such a happiness, the one which I defined just now, sukham, dukkham free sukham, eternal sukham, niratishaya sukham, is it possible at all or not, if you ask the question, then we have to go still more deeper into the analysis of people. So generally, we can classify properties of people into two categories. One is a natural or intrinsic property of anything, and another is an acquired property. Now if you take intrinsic property, if you say water, water's intrinsic property is to be cold. It is the nature of water, it is the dharma of water, it is the property of water which is innate to water. If you take fire, the nature of fire is to be hot. The intrinsic property of fire is to be hot. The nature of fire is to be hot. Dharma of fire is to be hot. I am using all these terms synonymously so that when I use these norms later, you will know what I am trying to tell. Now, if you take the water, put it in a vessel and try to heat this water with this flame, this cold water becomes a hot water. Then this water has gained a property known as hotness by the association of the flame whose innate nature is to be hot. So water acquired a hot property. You remove the flame, then the water loses the hotness after some time. Because its intrinsic property is not hotness, its intrinsic property is to be cold. So there is an acquired property of hotness and there is an intrinsic property of coldness for water. Same thing for fire too. Same thing for everything. So if you want to have this property, then that property of hotness or any other acquired property, we understand, cannot be permanent. It is dependent on an external condition, namely heating in this case. Similarly, for every other thing, we can always have an external condition that may manifest in making some acquired property. Any acquired property is got through some external condition. Now, if we are sweat-free now because there is a fan running. The moment fan stops, our sukham goes away. Yes, depends on that fan. The moment fan, everybody will look all around. Till that time, everything was fine. Moment that stops, we will look all around. What happened? Air conditioning is gone, fan is gone. External condition. So to say that I can have infinite sukham, which is an intrinsic property, if people have to claim that, they have to realize that sukham cannot be an acquired sukham at all. If you have to acquire happiness from elsewhere, So long as that condition manifests, you can have that sukham, that happiness. So long the condition is removed, that happiness also will go away. So to say that I can have infinite happiness by acquiring from somewhere itself is a misnomer. We cannot acquire infinite happiness from anywhere. We should be able to find it where? Within ourselves. So that is the fundamental trait. Because people tend to miss this, people always find themselves in this sorrow or that sorrow. This is what Vedanta tells us, find happiness within yourself. It should be an intrinsic property. It is your nature. That is what you are. Ananda is natural to you. All other sorrow is only borrowed. They are external. You have no influence. You are not affected by them. That realization has to come. How that will come? We are all in a practical world of plurality. It is very, very difficult. Dukkham is seen every time. Sukham is also seen many times. But this is very, very difficult to comprehend. That my nature is sukham. These are all external. They don't affect me. That knowledge doesn't come. To get that knowledge, we have to strive. For that, we have to become eligible to get that knowledge. It is not that we are getting from somewhere. That is ourselves. But that awareness for us to come, we have to become eligible to go through that route by which I will be able to get that realization that intrinsic property is mine. I don't have to go anywhere to seek it. It is like keeping the key in your pocket and searching everywhere. Till you get the knowledge that it is in your own pocket, you will be searching everywhere. The moment we get that knowledge, it is within us, all the search stops. So this is the thing Vedanta tries to address and tries to teach us how to go about getting that kind of an awareness. So this is Jnana Marga. This is called Jnana Marga. All other things are all Karma Marga. We are going through a lot of actions, this action, that action to get something. Jnana Marga alone will give us the ultimate happiness, which we call in Vedanta either as liberation or moksha. And that is the goal of everybody. All other happinesses are all intermittent happiness. I can get good job, intermittent happiness. After getting good job, I have to get a promotion, another happiness. You get promotion, another happiness. You want to retire with a large package, another happiness. All are intermittent goals, intermittent happiness. Ultimate happiness is only one, that is liberation. Liberation from this cycle of birth and death. That should be the ultimate goal. Every person who is born as a human being is entitled to that moksha. It is regardless of caste, creed, gender, whomsoever is evolved can gain that goal of reaching moksha. This is what, these are the fundamental things in Vedanta. So to get permanent sukham, the condition should be what? That sukham should not be dependent on any external condition. That is one fundamental thing in Vedanta. Okay. Now, the Vedic scriptures are the ones that teach us how to acquire such a happiness. And if you take the Vedic scriptures at large, you can divide them into two parts. One part is called the Karma Kanda portion, which deals with all the karmas, rituals, whatever we do, and all the mantras that are deployed in doing those rituals. And there is another portion that is called the Jnana Kanda, which teaches how to go about acquiring the qualifications needed for gaining that ultimate knowledge, that moksha, that liberation. That's what that teaches. So two sections, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda. And in the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas, we have got the Samhita portion. These are all just only factual information, textbook information, nothing big here. Just only I have to, for the sake of completion, I have to tell all this. So Karma Kanda portion has got different parts. Samhita, which deals with the actual mantras, which are the Mula mantras, basic hymns. In Rig Veda, they will be the glory of God, Yajur Veda, rituals, all that. Then they have got the Brahmana portion, which are used for doing so many ritualistic practices. And there is the forest texts, which are the Aranyakas, which are written in the forest. So many principles, it is like various concepts of Vedanta will be alluded to in that. And these are the portions which are essentially dealing with the Karma Kanda, ritualistic portions. Jnana Kanda portion, you got the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutras, all these things come under Jnana Kanda, which deal with the ultimate truth, namely Brahman. what is the ultimate reality. You have got so many other things which we think as real. What is ultimate reality is dealt with in the Vedanta portion, that is Upanishad. So Vedanta means Vedasya Antaham, which is kept at the end of the Vedas. Or we can also take it as Antaham means end. Or we can also take it, once you go to Vedanta, there is nothing further to go. It is the end. So when somebody reaches to Vedanta, after doing all this, there is nothing more to seek. That is the ultimate end, because that gives them the path to liberation, the path to moksha. So these are all the fundamental things. So all the words used in Vedantic principles, Atma, Brahman, all these things, they have to be explained and understood first. For that only we have got this text like this, Atma Bodha, Tattva Bodha, all those. So I will be using all those things as we go with respect to our explanations. Now, for a person to gain this jnanam, this knowledge, there is a requirement. And that requirement, the Vedantins, they tell that there is a fourfold qualification a person needs to have to be eligible to go through the path of self-awareness knowledge. They call it sadhana chaturtaya sampattihi. Chaturtaya means fourfold. And what are these fourfold qualifications? One should have viveka. Viveka means the discriminative ability between what is eternal and what is ephemeral. We should know what is permanent, what is impermanent. That discriminative ability we should have. So that comes through so many things. How to acquire them, we will talk about later. Right now we are only telling what qualifications are important. Viveka. Next is vairagya. Vairagya is dispassionate attitude. What is dispassion? I do some action. For that action, what I expect? I expect a reward. I do work, I expect a promotion. I study well, I want to get good grade. So this is for every karma, every action we do, we expect something. But doing a karma without expecting a result, but doing it as a sense of duty, detached with respect to the karma palam, the fruit of that action, is dispassion. That is vairagya. So viveka is number one, vairagya number two. And the third one is a group of six qualities put as one group called shamadhi shatka sampattihi. Shatka means six. Shamadhi, shama and six of them. Shama is mind control, to control the mind so that the mind doesn't go here and there. Mind control. Then dama is sense control. We have to control our senses. If carrot halwa is very nice, take one spoon. But mind doesn't stop there. The tongue tastes so much. Keep on adding. Add ice cream also to that. Keep on going that. No tongue control. What you should see, what you should not see. What you should hear, what you should not hear. We should know. So that gossip is always interesting. Shut off. So these are the things which are sense control. Dhamma. And then third is called Uparama. Uparama, everybody has a Swadharma. Duty. Swadharma is nothing but duty. Whatever is my duty, as a manager, I have some duties. As a husband, I have some duties. As a student, I have some duties. As a person in society, I have some duties. Follow that dharma. That is Uparama. Then Titiksha. Titiksha is the Sahishnutvam, the endurance between opposite experiences. Opposite experiences, very cold, very hot. Sorrow, happiness. Rama was given the kingdom at one time. Next moment, he was asked to go to the forest. Sukham, Dukham. To treat with them, treat both of them. These are all things that can happen. How to deal with that? That ability to do that is Titiksha, endurance. And Shraddha. Shraddha means faith. Faith in what? Faith in the words of the teacher. Because the teacher teaches only whatever is in the scriptures. Teacher does not give anything just himself. Whatever he teaches from the scriptures alone is original teaching. And if we have to have Shraddha, faith in the teacher's words, that means we should have faith in the scriptures. Scriptures are the ones which tell us what is our true nature. If we have to understand our true nature, only scriptures can guide us. So the teacher, the guru, is the one who tells the scriptures and explains that to us. So we should have that faith in the teacher's words, that is Shraddha. And Samadhanam. Samadhanam is the focus of the mind. Samadhi stage. I should be able to have that one pointed goal. Moksha is my goal. All other things are not, I am not concerned with them. That kind of one point mind is, the nature of mind is supposed to be oscillating. That's why we call mind is a monkey. Jumps from this to that, this to that. Sankalpa, vikalpa, atmakam, manaha. The mind's ability is to only vacillate. Nischayatmaha buddhihi, atmika buddhihi, the intellect is supposed to bring the oscillating mind to a focus and make a right decision. This is what you want to do. That is the nature of intellect. So the mind should be always single-pointed, goal should be focused, that is samadhanam. So this is the third qualification. So viveka, vairagya, samadhi, shatka sampattihi, and the fourth one is mumukshutvam. The craving desire that I want to get moksha. Moksha desire should not be a casual desire, should be craving. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, one of his students, he went and asked him, Swami, everybody says that you have seen God. Now can you show me that God? I also want to see him. So Ramakrishna said, fine, you are a great student, you want to see God, that is very nice. Tomorrow early morning, 5 o'clock, you should come home. We both will go to Ganges River. I will show God. Okay, so this guy came 5 o'clock early morning. Ramakrishna took him to the river. They both got into the river. So this person thought, we have to see God only after taking bath. We should be pure, all that thing he thought. So ready to get into the river. Both of them got in. Ramakrishna held him by the hand, went into the river. This deep, this deep, this deep, this deep. Pressed him down into the water. 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. This guy thought, what is happening? I thought this Swami is going to show me God. He is going to directly send me to God, it looks. So he came from the water with that much of force. Then Ramakrishna asked him, how was the experience? He said, what experience? You were dispatching me directly to heaven. He said, do you have that much urge to see God? Then you will see him. So mumukshutvam is that craving desire. Without seeing God, I will not eat, I will not sleep. That is the only thought. Dhruva Swami, such a young child, when he wanted to see Narayana, Narada came and he told him, I will give you this, I will give you that. Why are you worried about seeing that Narayana? He is in some Kshirabdi. Don't worry about him. Very difficult. This child would not compromise for anything, settle for anything. He went on doing penance till he reached that Lord. That should be the craving desire, mumukshutvam. So these are the four qualifications a person should have to be eligible to pursue Jnana Marga. To hear Upanishad lecture somewhere and say, okay, I know Aham Brahmasmi, we know only those words. We don't know beyond that. Because to get those qualifications is a lifelong process. It may be a process for several janmas for a lot of people. Because there are so much of distractions in life. We get carried away by so many other things. We forget what is the ultimate goal that we have to seek. So to gain these four qualifications, what is needed? The same scripture, they also tell us what one should do to gain these qualifications so that one can become eligible, one can become fit for pursuing the path of jnana. The jnana marga, the path of wisdom, to get self-awareness, self-knowledge, aham brahma asmi iti jnana. Okay, so these are the things, that's all. So if I want moksha, I need self-knowledge. And if I need self-knowledge, I should be an adhikari, the eligible, the fit person. Vedantic term is adhikari. And if I am not an adhikari, now how to acquire that qualification? That is the biggest question. So more than gaining moksha, the biggest challenge that anybody faces is to how to become eligible to path to pursue that path of jnana. And that is a lifelong process. So the Purva Bhaga, the first portion of Veda, it never talks about self-knowledge, it never talks about any jnanam or any of those things, but helps a person to get these qualifications. Viveka, Vairagya, Samadhi Shakta Sampattihi, and that's what they talk about. And the second part of the Veda, the Vedanta portion, tells us through that path, how will you go to acquire that awareness and gain liberation, gain moksha. So this is all clear to us. So Purva Bhaga is like entrance examination. And you have to get through an entrance examination to go to the, it's not real examination. By passing entrance examination, you don't get a degree. You get admission to the school. And having gone there, you have to pursue the path of Jnana Marga to gain the diploma. That is how the things is. So Veda Purva Bhaga makes a person adhikari, an eligible person. That's what adhikari means. It's like a doctor, when you go to a doctor for an operation, he doesn't immediately, you know, does the operation. What he does, he first sees whether you are fit to be operated. So he has some screening test. He is trying to do a screening test to make sure that you are eligible to do. If you have diabetes, high sugar, he will first bring down the sugar. He will approach a few things first to make sure your operation goes successful. Same way here, by trying to get these four qualifications, we are going through the screening test to become eligible for the final exam of going to moksha. So this is what is there. Okay. Now, when we go to these things, by going to Jnana Marga, what we are trying to get rid of is our ignorance of ourself. So it is, ignorance is called Ajnanam. So we can call it Ajnanadektami or something we can call in medical language. To get rid of this Ajnanam, one can go to Moksha. For this purpose, to get this Adhikaritvam, the eligibility, to get a prepared mind, the scriptures, they prescribe two types of sadhanas. Sadhana and all, I think I can use those words, right? They try to put two types of approaches, what one should do. One is karma activity. Do lot of activity, lot of karma, one can do that. Of various actions you can do. What are these actions one can do? The karmas also can be separated into two categories. One is called laukika karma, another is vaidika karma. Laukika karma is again what? You know, getting name, fame, good position, good house, good, you know, people. All these things are laukika karma. I want to get good education, good job. And Vaidika karma is also doing other karmas where you do so many ritualistic practices as given in the scriptures. Shraddha karmas people do, ancestral rites, you do so many karmas which are all involved, yajnas, all that in Vaidika. And both these karmas, so you can have now two types of karma, Laukika karma, Vaidika karma. And both the karmas can be again done with two attitudes. One is called the Sakama karma, another is called Nishkama karma. So whether it is Laukika karma or Vaidika karma, both can be done either as Sakama karma or Nishkama karma. Now we'll see what is Sakama and Nishkama. Sakama karma is a karma where I want to do this action to gain something for myself. I have a selfish motive. I want to get a good job. I want to get a promotion. I want to get my daughter married. I want to get my sons, whatever he wants to get. So all these things, they all come under Sakama karma. With the desire in mind, you want to do that karma. Nishkama karma are those karmas, you do this same karma with a sense of duty. I have no expectation out of the karma myself, but I am accomplishing it as a sense of duty. This is my duty as a parent. This is my duty as a husband. This is my duty as a manager. I do that duty. That is Nishkama karma, doing the same karma with that attitude. I have nothing personally, no agenda of myself. So the Laukika karma also can be done with these two attitudes, and the Vaidika karma also can be done with these two attitudes, but the effects are different. When you do Sakama karma, you want to get those desires fulfilled. When you do the same thing with the Nishkama karma, then a person who does a Sakama karma, he is a karmi. In Vedanta, he is called a karmi, a person who is action oriented, who has got his selfish whatever desire he has in mind, that's all he got. The moment he does the Nishkama karma, the same action done without any expectation, but as a sense of duty, but as an offering to the Lord, that action becomes a Nishkama karma, and that person, instead of a karmi, he is called a karma yogi. So between karmi and karma yogi, there is no difference in the action. Action being same, only the attitude being different. Whatever was called the karma, now is called a karma yoga. And Krishna is going to spend the full third chapter on this karma yoga. We are not going to discuss it now, but I am just only introducing that term to you. Between the difference between an ordinary karma and a karma yoga. So Sakama karma, when you do it, it's a karma. When you do it nishkamataya, without anything, as an offering to the Lord, as a sense of duty, that becomes a karma yoga. Okay, these are the things. So this, but how do you differentiate whether it is a Sakama karma or nishkama karma? How do you differentiate? you go to the Lord Guruvayurappan, you want to go pray, you want to do an archana to him. The moment you do archana, what the priest immediately says, he in the dharmartha kama moksha, all that thing, shemastha ide vidya vijaya abhaya ayura arogya aishwaryartham so sat in the satvara praptyartham sat, you know, all those things, he puts a list, so many things, sakama dharma, all these things you want out of that. A $10 ticket to get all these things to us. One archana, not only for me, but then I include my son, my daughter, my father-in-law, daughter. So many people. Because no problem. God doesn't limit the list of people, right? The priest has patience anyway, he can go on to say all the names, no problem. So you go on listing all this, all sakama karma. So this is what you want to achieve by doing that offering to that Lord. All these things are all sakama karma. And that also what? When Krishna is devoting a full chapter on this entire thing, so we are not going to talk about it now, detail. But this is what a person does when he does a sakama karma. So your resolve, when you do a karma, that tells you what kind of karma you are pursuing. If you are doing the karma, jnana vairagya siddhyartham, that will never come in this entire list. All the other things will come. Kshemastha, irya, virya, vijaya, vayura, arogya, everything will come. Jnana vairagya will never come. But that is what we want to get. Ultimately, only that is the only passport to get jnana. We never ask for that. So if you ask that question, then it is nishkama. Even though that is also your goal, that is an irreversible goal. Once you go there, never comes. Punarjanma? So that is the thing. So you will never come to punarjanma again. That should be the attitude. So whether it is a sakama karma or nishkama karma is decided by you only by the way you do the resolve. So ultimately where I am driving is, you are the controller of everything. It's not that somebody tells you to do this and that. You take charge of everything. That's what it says. So you do a sakama karma or nishkama karma. That's what you want to do. So Veda Purva Bhaga, the first portion of the Veda, it talks about. So by doing this nishkama karma, by becoming a karma yogi, what is the benefit? You get chitta shuddhi, purity of mind. Chitta shuddhi means purity of mind. Only when the mind is pure, the mind will be able to concentrate. If the mind is not pure, it is not going to concentrate. So first requirement for this mind to have gain focus is to make it pure. This purity is not an ordinary thing. Purity is mind. Normally people will say, oh, I can do all these things, only mind should be pure. As if mind purity you can get in Macy's, buy one, get one free, mind purity. It doesn't work like that. To get mind purity is so difficult because the mind has so much of crud in it, acquired through this janma itself and also through several janmas which we don't know. If you have a small dirt somewhere, you can wipe it with a cloth. Maybe it is slightly more, you can wash it with some detergent. Or if you have something more, you can scratch it. This is so much, you have to chisel it. And even then it won't go. Because this is the crud acquired over so several janmas. I used to always tell in my lectures, God has enabled us to see everything else. I can see your eyes, I can see your head, I can see your glasses, I can see everything. I can never see your mind. So same thing for every one of us, not being able to see my mind. To be able to see somebody else's mind, we don't know what is there in store. This is how things are. So the crud that is there in this mind has to be removed by so much of sadhana. May not be possible in one janma for some people. Very, very difficult. So much of determination should be there. And that sadhana should be so intense. So the purity of mind is achieved by doing a karma yoga. So karmi, karma yogi, result is chitta shuddhi, purity of mind. Okay. Now the mind is pure. With the purity of mind, can I get moksha? No. Why? I don't have focus yet. Mind is clean, but it's still vacillating. It is still not focused yet. So I need another trait, namely chitta naishchalyam or chitta ekagrata, the one-pointedness of the mind, the focus of the mind. Only when the mind focuses on moksha, focuses on that particular thing, then only you will be able to achieve that. So first we need chitta shuddhi, purity of mind, and then we need chitta naishchalyam or chitta ekagrata, which is then accomplished through another sadhana called upasana. So we have karma, sakama karma, nishkama karma, nishkama karma, karma yoga, and then the second, which gives chitta shuddhi. Now we are going to the next step, namely upasana. Having gained a pure mind, I can now focus. Mind doesn't vacillate. clean, I can make the mind focus on particular thing, and that is chitta naishchalyam or chitta ekagrata, the one-pointedness of the mind. So this is the second sadhana. So chitta shuddhi, chitta ekagrata. Once these two things are there, then the person can have vairagyam, because mind is pure, he can have vairagyam. The sadhana chatushtaya sampatti which I told just now, he can gain those qualifications, and then he can enter into Vedanta to accomplish jnanamarga. So these are all important. Like, even if you take, you know, Vishnu Sahasra Namam, dharmarti prapniyate dharma. The one who desires dharma, he gains dharma, because upasana. He is now thinking about the Lord, praying to the Lord through upasana, Vishnu Sahasra Namam upasana. Then he can get all this. Artharti prapniyate artha. So a person wants wealth, he wants gain money, you will gain. God will give you. No problem at all. Kamarti, same thing. Whatever desire you want to have, through upasana, one can gain those things also. So same upasana done, sakama. With the desire in mind, if you do upasana, then it becomes a sakama upasana. You can pray to God all these things. You may be able to gain all those things, sakama upasana. But the same upasana a person can do, nishkama also, as a sense of duty. God is the person who has given me the entire world. Normally, Swami Dayananda Saraswati makes a remark. It is not that we are in a, you know, 5-star or 6-star hotels. We are in a 1,000,000-star hotel. God has given us so much of nature for us to enjoy. So everything is available in the moment the child is born. What is available? The entire world is available. The entire world of so much of infinite opportunities, infinite, so many varieties of things are all available. How do you take advantage of it depends on only your free will. How those opportunities are available. So we should be able to gain all of them. So the person can do it as a sakama upasana, or he can also do it as a nishkama upasana, thanking the Lord for every minute of our stay. Our staying and breathing each moment is a miracle. We only don't understand that. Staying and breathing is a miracle. All others are not miracles. This is a miracle. We don't understand that many times. That God has enabled us. So we have to be thankful to that God. Thank the nature. Look at people as our humans. Look at people as for all other people who are all representing the same Chaitanyam. The same thing under. So a mind that will become Visharata, the one that is broad, the one that can accept everything in nature as God's creation and to make, live a life, everything in, actually there are people that used to, they normally tell about a story. This is the king. This king is supposed to be a very virtuous and a very noble, righteous king. And the devas got so much annoyed, they became jealous of this guy. Everybody says, oh, you should be like that king, like that king. Devas, you know, they think they are the superior ones, but people are telling this king, an ordinary human being, to as a great person. So they wanted to test. So Indra himself came. Indra, whenever his position is challenging, he has to come down himself. So himself and his other devas came. So they wanted to test this man. This person's quality is he will see only positive virtue in everything. That is his nature. He will never look at negative things at all. Everything, whatever you put him in the worst of circumstances, there also you will see only the positive thing. So what happened? One of the devas, he was lying on the way where the king was walking, as a dead dog. And that dog also, a very dog, a lot of disease, so much of things, you know, I mean, everything was so bad about the dog. Durgandhas, you know, all bad smell, everything. Walking Indra and the king, now he is coming with his ministers, he is walking through that thing, and the dog is lying there, and the dog, looking at the dog, the minister is, oh, the king is going like this, what to have, so he was trying to look for some servants to clear the dog. The king looks at the dog and he says, look at the teeth of the dog, how bright they are. Even in that environment, this king looks at only the brightness of the teeth of the dog. Indra immediately came out and he said, oh king, I have heard so much about you through so many people, now I see really who you are. So to look at positive things, to look at nature, every minute of our life is a blessing. To think that way, it requires a totally different frame of mind. So same upasana done with nishkama attitude becomes such an upasana. So one can do upasana with the nishkama attitude. So karma, nishkama karma, upasana, nishkama upasana, then a person becomes eligible to go into Vedanta. So Vedanta requires this much. So it is not a casual reading, but we don't have to think, these are all awareness lectures, we should understand. So not that we are going to immediately go into Brahma Vedanta Marga. It's not, but these are all awareness, how our rishis have structured this process. Even going to moksha is a structured process. How it has to come. They have enabled us how to go through this process. They have taught us so much to make sure that every being, what he is entitled, she is entitled to go to moksha, is accomplished by them. That is the birthright, we can accomplish that. So nishkama karma palam is vairagya. And nishkama upasana palam is mind control, sense control, all those things one can get, so one can become eligible. So karma yoga, chitta shuddhi, purity of mind. Upasana, chitta naishchalyam, focus of mind. So these are all things which we should be clear when we go further. Okay, so one becomes an adhikari, eligible with the pure and steady mind. So pure mind, steady mind, both are needed. It is like a drawing board. You know, if you have a drawing board, unless the board is clean, whatever I draw there will not be visible to you properly. So we need a clean board. Another thing also, the board should not be moving itself. It should be firmly fixed. If the board is moving, whatever I write will be also like that. It will be vacillating. So you need a clean board. You need a board that is fixed. So clean board is purity of mind. Mind is like a board. And fixed board is the steady mind. The non-wavering mind. So both of them you have. And karma yoga will get us purity. And purity of mind, upasana, will get us a fixed mind, a steady mind. So this is why... So all these Puranas, all these scriptures, they all address all these three. You take any Purana, you take any Veda, you take any scriptures, Bhagavad Gita, they will address all the three. Karma Yoga, purity of mind, Upasana, focus of the mind, and Jnana Marga, Vedanta, for gaining self-knowledge. This is the content in all of them. Bhagavad Gita will contain all the three, and we are going to see all of them as we see Bhagavad Gita. Okay, this is the general, I am trying to give the general introduction. Now, when it comes to Vedas, the Vedas, they are strewn over all over the place. They give all these concepts in so many places. So to get them all together is very, very difficult. And they are also called, in Sanskrit, they call them Prabhu Samhitam. Prabhu Samhitam is like a king ordering his subjects, do this, do that, Satyam Vada, Dharmam Chara, follow the path of righteousness, tell the truth. These are all commands. Veda will give these commands. Veda will not tell you, if you don't do that, what will happen, won't done. It will say, follow this, that's it. Like a Prabhu, like a king. Prabhu Samhita. But for common people, these are the clouds. They cannot understand any Vedas. Very difficult. Okay, you need a lot of commentaries, and you need commentaries for the commentaries, and for that you need some teachers to come and tell. It's all very difficult. And for that, what the rishis did, they wrote what are known as Smriti Granthas. Smritis are other texts. Whatever is contained in the Vedas only are told. But they are told in a fashion which were remembered, collated, and then presented in a manner where there is some cohesiveness. Instead of lying here and there is some cohesiveness. These are all Smriti Granthas. Parashara Smriti is one. Manusmriti, we have all heard of Manusmriti. Yajnavalkya Smriti, there are so many Smritis. So there are Vedas, then there are Smritis. But the rishis were not satisfied. Because what happens, as the Yuga Dharma process proceeds. First we had the Krita Yuga, Satya Yuga, and then we had the Treta Yuga, Rama's time, then Dwapara Yuga, Krishna's time, now we have Kali Yuga. As the Yuga proceeds, each Yuga is very long. If I just to give you the timing, Kali Yuga is supposed to be 432,000 years long. 432,000 years is Kali Yuga. Twice that is Dwapara Yuga. Thrice Kali Yuga is Treta. Four times Kali Yuga is Satya Yuga. So all these four Yugas together is called one Chatur Yuga, that is 4,320,000 years. So long a period. And from the Satya Yuga, Krita Yuga to Kali Yuga, the people's intellect has been always on a constant degradation. So in Kali Yuga, people, Bhagavatam says, Kali Yuga people are Manda Buddhihi, no intellect at all. All whatever we consider as lot of intelligence is still Manda Buddhi only according to our scriptures. We may say, oh, this guy got Nobel Prize, all that Manda Buddhi only. Because that is how Yuga Dharma is such that people, because diversions are so much, concentration has become reduced. Because concentration has become reduced, the mind also is not thinking analytically many times. One or two here and there happens, but in general. Manda Buddhi, that's what this thing says. So because people cannot understand, the rishis were not just satisfied, the smritis also, then people like Veda Vyasa, they wrote Puranas. There are 18 Mahapuranas, Bhagavata Purana, Markandeya Purana, Shiva Purana, so many Puranas are there, 18 Mahapuranas, 18 Upapuranas, auxiliary Puranas. Veda Vyasa wrote all these essentially because whatever concepts are given, he concretized those concepts, abstract principle, by personifying them. So if Veda says Dharma Satyam Vadam, then he created the story of Harishchandra. So Harishchandra is the person who followed truth even at the most excruciating circumstances. Dharmam Chara, there is a Yudhishthira, a Dharma Deva. And then Pitruvakya Parama Paripalanam, there is one Rama. So he created personalities who say give the same concept that is given in Vedas through stories. So in these stories, there will be so many events that will be happening. But in and through them, there will be some underlying concepts of Dharma that will be given there. So in a way, people can understand. So that common people all will be able to get an understanding of our fundamental values and our fundamental traits for which these Puranas were written by sage Vedavyasa. In addition, there are two great epics also written. Valmiki wrote Ramayana and Veda Vyasa again wrote Mahabharata. All these things. Mahabharata contains hundreds of thousands of slokas, 100,000 and odd slokas. Very, very difficult, very large. People cannot read the entire Mahabharata. Those days people were reading all of them because Buddhi was not Mandabuddhi. Very difficult. People want still, you know, if you say Vishnu Sahasranamam at the end, Vishnu Sahasranamam, you know, it has got about 108 slokas, 1,000 odd names for the Lord. But Parvati asked, okay, this is fine. Is there any shortcut? Keno Payena Laguna Vishnu Nama Sahasram. Can somebody can get the punya of all reciting all the 1,000 namas through a shortcut? For which Ishvara answers, yeah, just Ramanama is enough. Sri Rama Rama Rameti Rame Rame Manvarami is enough. So Ramanama is enough. So that is how our attitude is now. Because Parvati now speaks with compassion for us actually. This guy has no time to even recite even 10 shlokas. So Rama Rama at least you say, that's enough. So Veda Vyasa, he wrote these stories. So in Mahabharata, hundreds of thousands of shlokas are there, very difficult. But even that large text also will address these three things, karma, upasana, yanamarga. Because that is the ultimate goal. It will also, Ramayana also same thing. The Vasishta taught Rama Vedanta. Because of that, Rama could be able to understand when he was given the kingdom, he was not excited or elated. He showed happiness to father, that's fine. And when he was asked to go to the forest the next moment, he didn't get despaired also. Because he had the attitude of looking at Panditaha Samadarshinaha, the one who can look at with equanimity any circumstance, that is a Pandita, comes out of self-knowledge. And that is what Rama gained. So all these Puranas, Itihasas, all of them, even though they have got a lot of stories, Mahabharata is a story written long time ago, valid for all times. It was written long time ago, valid for all the times. There is no Dharma that is not discussed in Mahabharata, is discussed elsewhere. So comprehensive. But even in that, the rishis did not lose focus. They again concentrated on karma, karma marga, upasana marga, and jnana marga. So they were all there. Now in this great Mahabharata, hundreds of thousands of shlokas, this Bhagavad Gita is only a drop, 700 shlokas. Mahabharata is 100,000 and odd shlokas. This is only 700 shlokas. And at least those days people were doing Parayanam of Mahabharata. Now we are trying to see whether we can do Parayanam of at least Bhagavad Gita, the 700 shlokas. So if 700 shlokas, actually when I do Gita Mahatmyam at the end, which is going to be after several years, at that time we will say, okay, even if you cannot do all the 700, doesn't matter, at least so many shlokas. Not so many shlokas doesn't matter, one shloka. At least one shloka doesn't matter, that is an Eka Shloki Gita. At least say that much. We are going to say all those things at the end when we talk about Gita Mahatmyam, because we want everything in capsule form. But what is that?
When does that, maybe we'll start with the Eka Shloki.
That's what, see that he knows. He knows that. That's why he put that shloka also. So he knows this, that questions will come, so he put it that way also. So Eka Shloki Gita. So these are all various, because Anda Buddhi asked. This is the Yuga Dharma. We don't have to blame it on this. Yuga Dharma is like, nature of Yuga Dharma is like that. This is how it will be. So the sages have thought through all of them. So here also in Bhagavad Gita also, there is a story. And in that story, the context of the story was to bring the student to the teacher. That was the context of the story. So there are 700 shlokas, 18 chapters. So here, the development, normally how they make a movie, movie is, you know, maybe husband and wife is conversing something, they might, some episode they may be talking. Some guy might have listened to that, or some third guy might have heard of this. Then he will add all these things to him. He will bring a vidushaka, some joker, he will bring a villain, he will bring some other circumstance, some other talk, all that thing. Build up a story, becomes a movie. And we all pay money and go see that. So this is what normally happens. So here also in this thing, they will have some itihasa in Ramayana as an epic. Some of them may be true, some of them may be imagination. For example, whether Rama existed or not, whether Ayodhya was there or not, Ayodhya existed, Sharayu Nadi was there, facts. But there are so many other things that are there, whether they were facts, nobody knows. They are imagination, adrishya. So some of them will be true, some of them may not be true. They are all imagination of the Rishi to build up the story. So our interest is not to go into the story part of it. Our normally when we give lectures, when we give examples, people remember that example. But why that was given, many people will forget. Because examples are appealing, so they are entertaining, so they will remember that. But why that was, so here also the story part of it is not important. The concept is important. We don't have to worry whether Rama existed or not, we don't have to even go through that right now. But whatever dharma is taught, Ramon, Vigrahaman, Dharmaha. So whatever is supposed to be dharma, personification of dharma is Rama. Krishnam, Dharmam, Sanatanam. So these are the concepts we should understand. We don't have to worry about the story part of it if we want to evolve ourselves. Other people can have discussions, that's not, we don't have to worry about those people. But ours is to only understand the concept. So here also in Bhagavad Gita also there is a context. Mahabharata has a context. There is Dharma fighting Adharma. The Dharma is all the Pandavas, Adharma is all the Kauravas, but it's all the fighter. So all the evil thoughts and all those things with them, all these things. Normally the Kauravas, the Duryodhanas and all these people are supposed to be doing all the Mahapadakas, Agnidaha, burning somebody, and then Garadaschaiva, giving poison to somebody, and Shastrapanihi, you fight a war having weapon yourself when the other person doesn't have a weapon. So this is Shastrapanihi. And then Dhanapahaha, trying to take the wealth of another person, trying to take his wealth, his money away. And Kshetra Dharapahatta, taking somebody's land, trying to take somebody's wife. All these things are considered to be Mahapadakas. And Duryodhanas were doing only this all the time. So actually Kshatriya, the Pandavas, they have to fight Adharma and establish Dharma. That is the duty. It is the duty of a Kshatriya. Why I am telling that his duty is, when Pandavas fought this war, they were doing it not to gain a kingdom, but as a sense of duty of a Kshatriya. Kshatriya Dharma is that. So what is the Kshatriya Dharma? Shatatim Trayate Iti Kshatriyaha. Shatatim means what? The Shatam means disharmony, Adharma. When there is Adharma happening, Trayate, protection. The one who protects when there is Adharma, they are called Kshatriyas. So because they have to protect Dharma and then destroy Adharma, they engage in fighting this war. So that is the duty of a Kshatriya, fighting the war not for gaining a kingdom, but for upholding their duty. That's what they did. So there is a context there, and the war happened. And in the war also, now there is, Bhagavad Gita is happening, same thing there. There is a context there. Again, there is a development of a story. First chapter itself, there are a certain situation is created. Arjuna is now brought into the middle of the battlefield. All that story we will see later. So the aim is what? To bring an eligible student to a teacher, so that he will be able to follow, pursue the path of jnana. So moksha is the goal. So an eligible student is brought to the teacher through a setting. And that is what, through story and all those things.